Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 3040. That's 3040, okay? That's a lot of shows that we've had. Just think about it. Just for Stop Child Abuse Now show, it's over 3,000 shows, and I'm really proud of that. Tonight we have a special guest. It's Rachel Grant. She's from San Francisco, California, and she is an abuse survivor and returning NASCA family member. Now, before I get into or having her start her story, we also have a panel. We have two people who have called in. The telephone number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. Now, what I do every time that I run the show is to read the mission statement, and hopefully people will really absorb it and understand it, okay? We have a singleness of purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. And number one is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And number two is offering hope for healing through numerous pairs and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, we have a wonderful website. That's NASCA.org. That's NASCA.org. And if you go under prevention, it's in red blocks. You'll see it going across the page. And each block has a different title, a different subject. And as far as prevention, intervention, and recovery, you'll find it just about all the way over to the right-hand side. And I always focus on the prevention, because I do believe that if we, you know, kids who come from good homes, who haven't gone through the things that we've gone through, we're all survivors here, who didn't suffer the way that we did, the parents should learn to teach them not just to cross the street or watch out for the guy who pops out behind a bush. We have to teach them the good, the bad, and the ugly, okay? And the reason why I put it that way is we have some good people, you bet we do. Then we have bad, and then we have the really ugly, okay? And children should know these things because it's for their protection. We don't live in an innocent world, so when people say, I want to try to keep my child a child for as long as I can, they're being foolish. And they're not doing any justice for their child or their children because, again, we don't live in an innocent world. So on the pages that you find, looking under the red blocks, just about all the way over to the right-hand side of the prevention and so forth, there's all kinds of articles that teaches parents how to speak to their children, because many times they're the ones that are bashful. They're worse than the kids, you know. You don't teach your children about coochies and all this other stuff. No. And I could tell you why, but it's not my show. But the point is this. You have to be open and honest with your children, age appropriate, all right, but not to the point where you use the words coochies and something else, whatever. Tell them the names of their bodies and so forth, because that's what we've got. And don't do it laughing. They actually tell you to role play with your partner, your husband or whomever, and, you know, get it out of your system, that, you know, how you're going to feel, because you have to teach your children to be safe, especially in the world today. Okay. It's always been unsafe, but today we have more problems. So, all right, that's enough of me. Now I want to get to our guest, and Rachel, maybe you'd be so good as to start telling everyone who's listening. I see I have another call here, who's listening, you know, about your life and your memories of your childhood abuse. Go ahead.
Well, thank you, as always, for having me back. And hello, everyone. Good evening or good day, depending on when you're listening. And I'm so happy to be here tonight and joined by my colleague, Toby. Toby, you want to say hi? Is Toby able to say hi? Is Toby unmuted as well?
I think Bill is talking to her, but I'm not sure.
Okay, well, we'll have Toby come in a moment.
Okay.
So, yes, so for those of you who are just, you know, getting connected with me for the first time, my name's Rachel Grant, and I am based
Are you there? Where'd you go? That's pretty strange.
My older... Oh, great. My mom and my dad and my grandfather, who came to live with us when I was 5. And for many years, my grandfather was a real kind of companion and friend and playmate until I turned about 10 years old. At least this is when my kind of most conscious memory of trauma begins. And, you know, one day sitting out on the front porch swing like we had done hundreds of days before, something was different that day. And this day he began to touch me inappropriately. And I felt all the things that we feel when we're children and we're experiencing traumatic touch, and I was scared and confused and frustrated and upset and paralyzed, and I eventually kind of hopped up from the porch swing and I ran inside, and I was crying and I was upset, and you know, I didn't really know what to do in that situation. This was, you know, 1986, so many decades ago. And, you know, trauma, abuse, consent, safe touch, bad touch, you know, these weren't really conversations that were happening. And so I didn't have any framework for understanding, excuse me, what to do in that situation. And, you know, I had really loving, supportive parents, but even so, I didn't think to talk to them about this or to tell them. I didn't even necessarily have the words to say anything about it. And so, you know, the abuse continued for some time and it got worse. And then one day my mom just happened to walk by and see that he was touching me inappropriately. And, you know, her response, you know, tonight we're going to talk a lot about awareness and prevention and response. And her response was really pretty fabulous. You know, she just kind of got me away from him and asked me if I was okay. At the same time, her energy was really like focused on me. So it, in some ways it made, I thought, oh my gosh, like I'm the one in trouble here. And like, this is, you know, she's upset with me. But of course, looking back now as an adult, I know that's not what was happening. She was just trying to protect me and get me away from him. And so, you know, she and my father moved him out of our home very quickly. Again, another really great supportive response. And then after that, you know, they tried to have me go to therapy, and I just really didn't want to go. And, you know, there were a couple of times where we went to family reunions, and my grandfather was there, and there was kind of this there really wasn't any conversation about, well, how are we going to navigate that? Or, you know, you don't have to talk to him, or, you know, there wasn't really a lot of support around that. So they did a hell of a lot right. And they also did some things not so great, which is, you know, as I've been working now for 15 years in the field of sexual abuse recovery, as a coach, you know, my own journey of healing led me on this path and, you know, trying to address all the things that, you know, were the ways that I was impacted and the ways that I was hurt and the things that I was struggling with. Eventually led me to doing my master's in counseling psychology and developing the Beyond Surviving program. But, you know, last year I got connected with Toby Stark and we began to have conversations about, you know, awareness and prevention and doing trainings. And, you know, to be honest, I've shied away from that topic. Like, okay, my job is working with people who, you know, directly, you know, with people who've experienced trauma and supporting them in, you know, healing and breaking free from the pain of abuse and really moving on with their lives. And, you know, I'm going to let other people do the do the prevention work and the awareness and response work. But I just was so compelled by Toby and her approach and I just felt like the time is right. Like in my own journey, like it doing just trauma work is no longer enough. And so I'm really glad to be partnering with her for this upcoming training that we're doing in November. This will be the second time that we're offering it. And so that's a little bit about me. And I guess, Toby, if you're there and you want to share a little bit of kind of your story and how you came into this kind of world of doing prevention
she
response.
She is here.
Work.
Yes,
that's great.
I am here. I am here. And Rachel, thank you for sharing your story. You know, you and I land in the same place, but we come at it from very different places. And, you know, I was introduced to the world of prevention, child sexual abuse prevention, really a little over a decade ago. And, my first introduction was really as a job. And as I started learning more and more about it, and survivors were trusting me with their stories, and I was learning more about the research and the work being done, it was really interesting. I started thinking about my past. When things were right in front of me and I did not recognize them because I did not know. I think back to when I was in my mid-20s, very dear friend of mine. I'm really just about certain that her husband was sexually abusing her daughter. And in my mid-20s, you know, right around the time, Rachel, when you were experiencing your trauma and you said it, we weren't talking about these things. There were so many things I overlooked and I did not see as I was growing up as a child, as I was in my 20s, as I was in my 30s. And when you think about it, it's so simple. It doesn't have to be that way. It just does not have to be that way. We have the information and it's just a matter of opening our hearts, opening our minds, and having a willingness to have these conversations with our children, with each other, with the youth serving organizations. We can make such a difference when we can just step past that, the shame or the blame or the fear of this topic. We make a difference in a child's world. And then as we know, generationally.
That's right. That's right. I couldn't agree more with you. I'm sitting here listening to both of you. And it's so important. Yeah, and you just said something, too, that a lot of times it is generational. However, then there are those cases where it's not, and they just don't get it. You know, if they do their job, they'll work with the family, and they'll ask questions. Well, what about uncle here? Or what about this person here? Well, whatever. And then you realize that there wasn't any in the family. And that's always a puzzle to a lot of people and a lot to the professionals also, because usually there's one, there's someone, okay, and at least one. So, yeah, And, you know, I know what you mean, too, when you're talking just now. Toby, it's a pleasure to have you on, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And see, what we do here, especially on Friday nights, I love to educate the people and then to have two other people to educate people. This is wonderful. And there's probably a lot of people listening, and they listen to the computers or they listen later on to the archives, okay? So anyway, the point is that we do look backwards and all of a sudden something will hit us like, whoa, how could I stand that? I mean, you know, and then there's so many times, you know, like people, they get terribly depressed. And like this says here, some thoughts, we are innocent and guilt-free, yet we share feelings of shame and fear. And yet that was what you were just talking about, the both of you, the shame and the fear. We didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. We were just kids. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We didn't do anything.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's upsetting, you know, when I get calls in the AM, I'm the night owl. And then I sleep in the daytime. And I've done that with a lot of jobs that I've been a part of, you know, working in detox centers and all this other stuff. So I'm used to shift work, so it doesn't really bother me. But the phone calls that come in, gals, many times the people feel blame. Like, if only I could have done this, or maybe I was a better, if
sure.
I had been a better kid, you know what I'm saying? Maybe this wouldn't have happened. And it has nothing to do with that. It just doesn't.
And that's really one of the most important messages when we talk about prevention. When we talk to our children about body safety, one of those, you know, one of the messages is that your body belongs to you, you know, only you. Another message is nobody is allowed to touch you in a way that makes you feel uncomfortable or icky. Even if it may feel good in one way, if it feels icky in another way, nobody's allowed to touch you that way. Nobody. You know, and then the third message is, and if somebody does, it is never, ever, ever your fault. And there's just as much education on parents, you know, remembering that as well and saying things like, why didn't you tell me? Or how did you let that happen? Or why did you keep going back? That reinforces the message of blame when really we want to be reinforcing the message, this is not your fault. This never should have happened to you.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And I believe you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yes. But you know so well, too, that many times kids, because at times it does, you know, feel well, you know, feels good. Hey, look, God made our body to be a certain way. And I have to tell people this, and we speak about it openly, too, on the show, because it is a problem. You know, adults today will call in and say, well, I have to admit that it felt good. Well, of course it felt good. If you're going to stimulate yourself, you're going to feel good. Or if they're going, someone else is going to stimulate, you're going to feel good. And then what do they throw back at you? The pedophile, the sex offender, crimes against children. And then I have my naughty names, which I won't call them right now. But they throw back to you, they say, well, you enjoyed it. You see?
Yeah, it's a real deep manipulation. I was just listening to, there's a TED Talk right now out about kind of unwanted responses to sexual touch. And so I think that's just such a great message for, you know, for parents to understand, for guardians, for caregivers, anyone who's working with children, and then certainly for those who've experienced trauma, right? That, you know, arousal does not equal consent or want or desire. Your body responding does not equal any of those things. And yeah, and so, you know, deconstructing that and making sure that, you know, people are understanding of that very particular nuance is, you know, a part of the work that Toby and I are doing together, because, you know, we want to talk have some straight talk about these topics, because it often is so much in the shadows. And, you know, parents, you know, and caregivers and guardians, they, you know, like, okay, I know I should talk about this, but it feels really uncomfortable and I'm not quite sure what to say. And so, you know, that's, I think, one of the benefits of having so many great resources available to us now, like today, you know, here in 2022, I mean, my goodness, like, you can't, like, I would say, like, if you're not educated on this, then you're just, you know, being ridiculous, because there's so many great options and things that are available to make sure that you know how to talk with a child, how to, you know, be aware of what's going on, how to minimize and reduce the, you know, the risk of abuse happening. So thank goodness we have, you know, better platforms and programs and trainings so that we can do a better job, you know, by ourselves and by our children.
Right. Absolutely. But you still, you know, there's that brick wall, you know, of people where they don't want to push through that wall and say, okay, I'm going to stand up. I'm going to do, I'm going to step up. I'm going to do the right thing. I'm going to talk to my kids about safety, because they're still in that embarrassment mode. I mean, I look back, I'm older than you guys, I look back and everything was hush hush, you know, and pushed under the rug, and I always clown around, because I say one time I put my ear up against the door, one of those swinging doors, and because I wanted to hear what the adults were talking about. You know, the kids had to stay in one room and the adults were in the other room. Well, right. Someone came through the door and I went flying. Well, they were talking about me. They were talking about me. Because I had, you know, just been kidnapped and raped in New York. I'm from New York.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I was one of 14. So they had this monster, and I call them monsters because that's what they are, he only got 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then his wife was petitioning the court. Okay, that they were in desperate ways at home, because he had 3 children, and they were young, and she couldn't take care of things. He got out in 1.5 years.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that happened to you, and I'm sorry that was the overall experience with the system. Very sorry to hear that.
Yeah. And you know, I was always looking over my shoulder after that, because 1.5 years
right.
goes by awful quick.
So fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, something
you,
know,
you think of. Oh, go ahead, Toby.
No, please, go ahead.
Well, just my thought as you were sharing that was how, you know, children are innately curious about sex, about their bodies, and they're going to get information from, you know, somewhere. And they want to be kind of led and guided and taught and have honest conversations. And so, yeah, you know, rather than have them getting the information from resources or sources that aren't, you know, maybe necessarily the best, you know, be the person, you know, who's really leading the charge there. That was my thought. Yeah, Toby, what was coming up for you?
Yeah, you're 100% right, Rachel, and I'm really going to dovetail on that, because, you know, child sexual abuse, even child sexual abuse prevention, comfortable topic. I mean, under the best of circumstances, it's a very scary and uncomfortable topic. And one of the things that I talk to parents and guardians and caregivers is, if you are going to wait until you are comfortable having these conversations, if you're going to wait until you're comfortable making these changes, it's never going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We can't sit and wait till we're comfortable. We have to recognize the discomfort, and we have to step through it as adults, because you know what's really uncomfortable is when your child comes to you and tells you they've been sexually abused. That is far more uncomfortable than talking to a youth serving organization about their policies and procedures, or not making sure that your child is not one-on-one. So we really, as parents, we've got to put it in perspective and realize, do I want to be uncomfortable here and do some good, or do I want to be uncomfortable over there after something terrible has happened?
Right.
That is so, so true. Let's go to the panel. We have two people here. I know that would like to see. I don't know about the 216 area code. Let me just see if they want to speak too. Hold on a second. Oh, that's Rachel. That's you. You're down at the bottom now. You moved.
Oh,
that's weird. All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. So anyway, let's go up to Lori Purcell and see if she'd like to make a comment.
I have a question for Rachel first. I'm just back on the panel now, so I didn't know you from before. Okay. Your grandfather, did your mother know about him before she saw him with you?
Any indication he hadn't abused anybody else, or and so if that's your question, no, there was no like, oh, she had awareness that he had caused harm in the past and then moved him in. No, there had never been any indication that he would behave this way.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out if he was just like losing his faculties or he was born like that.
I don't think anybody's born a perpetrator. What I would say is that, yes, he was elderly. And there has been, along the way, one therapist, offered the perspective and the lens that, there could be dementia, unawareness, these sorts of things. The problem with that particular is just that it was the repetition of the trauma. Felt and the intention and some of the language that he would use with me, it didn't feel like, oh, he was mistaking me for or confused about where he was or what he was doing. It is a strange circumstance in the context that he, went whatever all of his life, not maybe, acting on that impulse or maybe not having opportunity, who knows? But it wasn't until he was in, his elderly years that happened. So, yeah.
Okay. I have the second thing I have to ask about is I'm 65, so my days in schools are far behind me. But my niece was working in the schools as a psychologist and kids were telling what was happening in their homes at that age. And I would, listening to both of you, I think it's wonderful how you interact with each other and with people. And I'm wondering if there's a way or if even the thought of actually trying to get into the schools to educate.
Toby,
kids.
Take that one.
Yes.
Toby's all about it.
I've actually spent a lot of time in schools doing body safety conversations, and I'm very pleased to be able to report that there are more and more national organizations that are creating body safety curriculum that are research-based, which is so very important. And a lot of states, it is becoming law that educators get this kind of training and that the students are getting this kind of conversation. And, the key is that it is age appropriate. Oftentimes you'll see one program for kindergartners, another program, say, for second and third grade, and then, a different one at fourth and fifth grade. And, I was doing these up through high school because child sexual abuse is still child sexual abuse with a 17-year-old. It just looks very different. It can have the mistaken identity of dating and having romantic interest in, but it's still child sexual abuse. So what I would suggest anybody who's listening, a great first step is to look and see if it is a state law in your state for kids to get body safety training and for educators. And there are some really wonderful curricula that are out there that are research-based and very age-appropriate. And then what's so important is then that parents continue those conversations in the home, because we know that body safety conversations aren't one and done. I'm so sorry to tell parents, you don't have this conversation, and then you go, oh, thank goodness, right. I'm done. I've had that. I don't have to do it again.
No way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about any other parents, but, you know, when I was teaching my kids to brush their teeth, I did not tell them once, and then they got it perfectly right every time. You know, I didn't tell my children just once to look both ways before they crossed the street, and they got it right every time. So it's an ongoing dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. That sounds
mm-hmm.
good.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
I
agree with that. You know, we have a 216. I wonder if she had called in earlier. Hold on a second. 216. Who am I talking to? This is Carol Levine.
Hi, this is Nancy from Ohio. I'm just listening.
Oh, you're just listening? Okay, honey. All right. I'll put you on hold then.
Thanks for being here, Nancy.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes people just like to listen, and that's fine too. But anyway, it's, you know, you made such a wonderful point there, because you don't just talk about, like, body safety once either, all right? You don't do that. You don't do it all the time, but you certainly, like, maybe once a month. That's what I used to do with my kids, because, for God's sake, I'm not going to say on the radio right now how many times I was sexually abused, because you'd all barf in plain English. It was just outrageous. And I'm still standing, and I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I really don't. Mm-hmm. But anyway, the point is this. You know, I think it has to be something that is implemented into, hey, how was your day today? Let's have family time. You know, let's just talk for about 5, 10, 15 minutes. It doesn't have to be a real drawn-out thing. You know, like, how was your day? Did anybody make you feel uncomfortable? Is there something you want to tell me? Just to keep in touch with the child, to let them know that you are there, you know, and they can feel comfortable talking to you. I didn't tell on an uncle of mine. I had so many, all right, on an uncle of mine, because I didn't feel comfortable with my mother. There was never any hugging, loving, none of that other stuff. Mm-mm. But I did tell an aunt of mine who was a drunk, and she was funny. she really was funny. And but I trusted her, and I knew she liked me. And she wasn't stupid. She said to me one day, she had come over to visit, and I was living in another home, and she came over to visit, and she said to me, Carol, she said, if ever there's anything you want to tell me, I'm here for you. Mm-hmm. Now, that was her moment of clarity. And so at the next party that they had, a real party, I decided I was going to tell. It was on the 4th of July. There's a lot of people in this house that I was living in. And I did tell her, but she was so drunk, I didn't know if she'd remember, okay? But you know what? She remembered. Mm-hmm. And I got out of there. So you see, a lot of times kids, it's not always mommy and daddy maybe that they feel comfortable with, because maybe mommy and daddy are dysfunctional, you know. There's problems going on in the family. My mother divorced. She got married. You know, I didn't even know the guy. Never saw him until we moved out to Staten Island. And then all of a sudden, gee, I have a new daddy. And he was in wooden shoes, and he had long blonde hair down to his shoulders. Yes, he did. He was Danish. And it was so funny looking at his wooden shoes. I remember I started to giggle. I couldn't help it, you know. But the man, he'd been in Holland. He'd gone to Holland. That's where he got his wooden shoes from. But anyway, we never had any conversation, he and I. He was always very bashful around me. And my mother just had no interest, which I'm not going to talk about now as to why. But the point is this. Sometimes kids have to find someone that they're comfortable with, too.
Yeah.
Now, my aunt may have been a drunk.
Yeah.
Yep. But she was someone that made me feel good about myself, and she let me know, and this is what parents have to do. Let them know that she is there for them, or they are there for them. Yeah.
But, you know, you
and like you said earlier, be believed. Yes.
You bring up such an important point, and it goes back to the training that Rachel and I are doing in just a few weeks for parents, is parents as well as, you know, educators, anybody who could be considered a safe adult to children, they have got to be trained on how to respond to a disclosure of child sexual abuse so that the child is not re-traumatized. And you know, really anybody who's interacting with children on a regular basis should have this information of how to respond so that we're not re-traumatizing our children, and what conversations are we having with them so that they know we're not uncomfortable having these conversations. You can come to us and talk to us about these things because, look, we're already talking to you.
Yeah, and that's what I really enjoyed about our training when we did the Empowered Parent back in April, you know, being able to work right on the spot with people to help them kind of construct a little bit of scripting, like how would you language this? How would you approach this? Doing some, you know, scenarios, different scenarios that are specific to, you know, their families, their circumstances, their situations. But even just having some safe space where you can kind of, okay, let me just hear myself saying this. And even like we'll, you know, give you a workbook that you can take with you and you'll have access to that has, you know, some of those reminders and even like a little calendar. We're talking about the importance of repetition. So it's what you say, it's how often you say it. And yeah, just creating the family culture that, hey, this is on the table and we're going to talk about these things. It's okay. It's not something to be ashamed of. And just having, you know, some support and guidance for how to kind of get to that level of clarity and languaging and sometimes just honestly, like for me, just like give me the script, just tell me what to say. And so we really do our best, you know, in this training to really hit on, you know, those important, you know, pieces that people, we want people to really walk away with that from the work that we're doing.
Right. You know, we've got to be able to provide parents really practical information that, you know, when they walk away from the training, they can think, I can truly do A, B, and C. And my I can't quite do D, but I can do A, B, and C. And I know by doing those things, I am minimizing the risk of abuse for my children. And, you know, Rachel, you're so right. You know, again, I don't know that we ever become comfortable having those conversations. I this is what I do for a living. And I remember I had to psych myself up sometimes to be that mom, right? Mm, you know, I'm going to be that mom who's going to ask about the child protection policies and procedures. I'm going to be that mom who doesn't want my child to be one-on-one with anyone. And that can be really hard. And so the community that we create makes such a difference, reminding us we're not alone and it's okay to be that mom. Whether you're
auntie,
a dad
like
or an aunt.
Think about via, you know, the a child in my life, right, who I've mentored and guided, you know, heading off to college. And in our last conversation, I was like, so do you know how to masturbate? Do you know how to have an orgasm? Do you know how to say no? And she's like blushing like crazy, right? She's going like, oh, Rachel, oh. I'm like, hey, like, your mom's not having this conversation with you, right? So, like, hey, sometimes, you know, finding those trusted adults, like, it can be a community that creates conversation, but just making sure the other adults who are speaking into your child's life, they're on the same page, right? And share the same maybe values or perspectives or information. But yeah, because the more people that we have feeling really empowered to just speak unabashedly, you know, unashamedly with our children, I think it's so beautiful. There's also, it's reminding me, I'm going to go on a little tangent. There's a Grey's Anatomy episode just recently where they were wanting to do sex education and they were having the younger, you know, residents come in to do the training, and they had written out all these kind of very dry, bland, very science-y. And then as soon as the people overseeing the program walked out, they just started having straight conversation. Right. And you could, and yes, I know it's contrived and it's TV, but I think there's something there, which is, you know, just be real, just be honest. Don't be bashful, don't be ashamed, because otherwise all of that messaging translates over, you know, to your child, that this is something that's supposed to be hidden and whispered about and,
right.
Yeah, and scary. And it's not scary. It's like it's part of our life, and we want to learn how to take care of ourselves and protect ourselves and move through the world in a safe way. And if something happens that's painful and hurts us or harms us, you know, come and tell me. Just like you would run and tell me if you, like, skinned your knee, I want you to run and tell me if something like this happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great point.
Absolutely. Well, let me ask you something. I've had done a lot of research, and also to schooling where we were taught that there should be a second party. Let's see how you feel about this. A second party where a kid can turn to. It can be a neighbor that they're very friendly with, they trust, okay? And hopefully that trust is in the right place, okay? Or it can be a family, another family member. If the kids are in trouble, say out on the street, okay, someone's following them and they're running and they try to call home, they have their cell phone, they're trying to call home and they can't reach anybody at home. Maybe the mother and the father will be home maybe in 20 minutes, but, you know, they have 20 minutes to go and this person's following them, whatever the case might be. And is it okay? I think it is personally, but do you think that there isn't some other person too that's trusted through the family that they can call and say, hey, I'm in trouble. You know, someone's following me, you know. And that is something that I was taught, that you should have someone outside of the family that you can trust. And you speak to that person, you say, hey, we were talking and we decided, you know, that, you know, for the sake of the children, you have children, I have children, I would certainly do it for you. Would you do it for me? And be like the second party so that the child would have someone else to call in case of trouble.
Yeah, we call those safe adults, actually. And I think it's wonderful if children can have five safe adults in their life. And they need to be able to identify who they are. And it could be a teacher. It could be principal at school. It could be a guidance counselor. It could be an aunt. It could be a babysitter / mentor like Rachel. It could be a neighbor. But it's great to have conversation with kids and say, if I'm not available to help you, do you know who you could go to? And truly right. Map that out with the kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, the more empowered, I mean, ultimately what we're talking about, I mean, this is why we call it the empowered parent, right? Because we want parents to feel empowered, confident, and that translates to the child. And so the more confident and empowered the child is, the more resource they're going to be, the less likely that something is going to happen and they're not going to get kind of the support that they need in the moment or after the fact.
It's so important for children to realize. I know of a case which I've spoken about on the radio before. But it's good to know for people to listen to again, if they've heard it again or not at all. There was this neighborhood not too far away from me, actually, where kids were playing in the front yard. And I'm talking about the neighborhood kids. And they're playing ball. They're kicking the ball around like soccer or something. I don't know. And this car, it was actually a van, was going around and around and around and around. And this one little girl had been spoken to by her parents. They had told her the red flags. See, this is very important, the red flags. And so she started to watch this van go around, but she thought, well, I'm not going to do anything. Yeah, it's just going around and around. And this kid was just a small kid. I think she was like six, but she had been spoken to by her parents. And before you know it, the van parked way up, you know, down the street. And two men got out and started walking. They started walking. You talk about being brazen. It wasn't even dark out, right? walking towards this, you know, these houses that were pretty close together, but they were little, like, ranch houses, whatever. And they approached the kids, and they had gone around for a reason. They wanted to pick their prey. And, of course, that is P-R-E-Y, okay, prey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to see which one they wanted to pick up or pick out. And it was this little girl. So they started to approach the kids, and they were sort of like sliding them out of the way. I mean, how brazen. And they went to grab her, and she said, "Everybody start to scream." And she kicked the one guy in the shin. So, okay. So that stunned them that she kicked them so hard. And everybody was screaming. So all the, you know, the people came out, and they ran. They ran like maniacs back towards the van. But before that van was out of that development, the police were at the other end. There was a car in the neighborhood. So the cops were there, and they got them. So you see, there's things that we can, prevention, that's a part of prevention, you know, to teach children. If people are acting in such a way, there might be a bad reason why, okay? Mm-hmm. And just keep your eye out, you know, watch and see, and to teach them how to defend themselves, you know. Now, this little girl, she knew to kick this guy in the leg really hard. She could have kicked him somewhere else. I don't know. But I'll tell you something. That's dangerous. I'll tell you why. Because a person can reach down, especially with a child, because they're short. They can reach down, grab the child by the ankle, and flip them up in the air. Think about it. And they can get away from them that way. They can do that. And, you know, teach children the right way to fight. I hate to put it that way, but that's the truth. And it's for their own defense. I believe in children going for self-defense classes. I think that's wonderful. And I think also, too, the community, something I'm very, very much involved with in any community that I live in or nearby. If the community becomes involved in what the red flags, what to look out for, and to speak to your children, what to say, what not to say, to read NASCA, okay, with our red blocks all the way over where it tells you how to, speak to your children, what to say, and age appropriately and so forth, and to role play first and so forth. I think it would make a safer community. Absolutely, I believe that. There's safety.
Yeah,
there's safety.
I think that what's really that you're hitting on is that, you know, when somebody starts to feel empowered and they start to see the impact, they want to spread that message. And so, yes, you know, if you have one parent in a circle who, you know, does this program, finds out, you know, gets resources, then, you know, they become confident to talk about this. And then they're talking about the other, you know, talking to the other parents, the other caregivers and guardians. And then, yeah, that's exactly right, that we become more resourced as communities and as people living and moving together. And, you know, there can be a little more of a mutuality in that, a little more tribe support rather than everybody kind of like, oh, I'm on my own. I have to do this by myself. And, you know, it's just me, myself, and I kind of mentality. Yeah.
Right. I'm very much for that. I'm going to start speaking on that soon because I believe, listen, there's so much trouble out there, okay? If our communities, you know, become more aware of child abuse and what can happen and how we as a community can help and what to look for, the signs to look for, all these things that we speak about, well, now it's time to take action, too. It was time to take action a long time ago, but we didn't. And now it's really time to take action because kids are kidnapped so much more now. You know, then even before, the stats have gone sky high. And then, of course, they're being put out on the street. I don't have to tell you this and what happens. But people have to understand that. And, you know, for someone to call the police, you know, and they see something, say something. We always say that, right? See something, say something. That's what we have to do. And community has to learn that. See something, say something. Don't turn your back anymore because too many lives are at stake. And unfortunately, they go after those that are weak, don't they? They go after the children or they go after the elderly, you know, if they want to steal their purse or if they want to hit them over the head and get their wallet, whatever the case might be. I mean, everyone is at risk, you know, whether they be young or whether they be old. So it's something the communities have to become more involved in. And I think I'll start going if they, well, where I, I'm in the sticks, honey. I mean, there's just bears and coyotes out here. I'm serious. And I don't know if I was better before, if I'm better now. But anyway, but if there is like a crime watch or something in this area, I have to find out. I'm going to talk to the police department.
Yeah.
I don't even have a police department in my town.
You know what you made me think of, Carol, is that. Yeah, you know, what you made me think of there is that, something that I really appreciated about partnering with Toby is that she has just done so much, like, goodness, is it 20 years now, Toby, that you've been doing this? And so, yeah, just like lots of, research and background. And one of the things that she's really bringing to this conversation is, how to deal with the reporting, because it is confusing. You know, their laws are different in every state. People get really like, oh, my gosh, what if I report this person and it's not real or it's not really happening and, oh, my, you know, and all of that. And so I really appreciate that we get to work through that in more depth in our training, because I think it is that – It's these two parts. Toby, do you want to speak to that? I think you know where I'm trying to get to. I'm just not finding the words.
And I'm so glad that you brought it up, because, you know, when we talk about how to respond to a disclosure or a discovery of abuse, there's really two paths to take. There's how do you respond to the child right there in front of you, so that you do not re-traumatize them, you don't impact negatively a criminal investigation. But then there's the legal obligation. And I don't know how it got set up this way, but just about every state has different child abuse reporting laws. There's only a few places where there's federal law that is the same across all states. And it's so important that we educate ourselves on what are the laws in our community, and how do we go about making that report so that there's the documentation, right? So that you're meeting your legal obligation, you're meeting your ethical obligation, you're not re-traumatizing the child. And we walk through both of those paths. So that people can feel really comfortable. I've called the Department of Child Services and made a report. And again, this is what I do for a living. And I won't lie, what kept going through my head is, what if I'm wrong about this? What if I am wrong? And that's where a lot of people are going to hang up the phone. But what they really need to do is complete that sentence and say, but what if I'm right? Let the system investigate it, explore it, and get to the truth.
Yeah. Well, what I was told by the police department, and that's in another town over, because like I said, they have to cover us now too. I don't know exactly what's going on around here with the police departments. I think Oxford is just too small, so we don't have our own department. So then Washington Township was involved, and now I think another one, and now I think it's the state police, for God's sake. I have to find out. That's why I'm not doing anything. But the point is this. A police officer once said to me when I had done a presentation, and that was part of the presentation, he was in there, say something, you know, don't just walk away and all this other stuff that we were talking about. And you're right. Because a lot of times people are afraid. They think, well, maybe I'm not right. Maybe I'm just, like, imagining it. Or maybe I'm, you know, and then they'd be embarrassed or the other people get mad and all this other stuff.
Well, and who,
you know, the
who
report
wants to
was
believe
made.
That?
But here
who wants
it is,
to believe
though.
That about another person?
Well, here's what the officer said to me. He said to me, it's better to be wrong than it is to be right. Okay. You know, he was thinking that they have no problems going and investigating And if nothing's going on, then that child is okay. See, that's the way he was looking at it. And never to feel bashful, because that's what they're there for. They're
right.
public servants. They're there
right.
to, you know, to serve the people. And if we think that something is going on down the block and that's not right, that a child is, you know, being beaten or raped or whatever the case might be, it's actually our obligation, you know, to make that phone call. And the states are now expanding. At one time, it was only 3 states or something. Now it's in the 20s. I found this out not too long ago, where bills have been passed, where
mm-hmm.
people, and they call us, we're not the teachers, we're not the, you know, the school systems or anything else, but we are the ones that are on the outside where we can make that, we won't get in trouble for making a phone call, okay?
Right.
And there's a separate
right.
name for it. I looked it up and I can't remember that name. So it's a
Good Samaritan. It's a Good Samaritan law.
Yeah.
If you make a report in good faith, then
right.
you will not be prosecuted.
Right.
Well,
that's exactly
and
right.
you know, Carol, you bring up so many scenarios, you know, of when it's and how it's important to protect our children. And if
mm-hmm.
I may, I'd like to bring up some statistics, some startling statistics. One in 10 children are sexually abused by their 18th birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And 90% of those children are abused by someone they know, love, and trust.
Mm-hmm.
Which means the messages that probably most of us were raised on, you know, the stranger danger, is important, but it's also very antiquated. And it's so important that parents and caregivers and guardians are learning how to protect children in this environment, in this world. Because child sexual abuse prevention really has to be consistent and constant. We're not protecting our children against a certain person or a certain type of person. We're just protecting our children, period. You know, when a child gets in a car, you don't say, sweetheart, we don't know this driver very well, so I want you to wear your seatbelt. We don't do that. Kid gets in a car, it doesn't matter who's driving. We want them to wear their seatbelt so they're safe. And so I think when one is a survivor of abuse, it's very easy to become hyper-focused kind of on that experience. And
mm-hmm.
you've brought up such a good point that this is community and this is happening around us. And we can be there for each other.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah.
Nobody's alone in this.
Well, that's it. You see, there's numbers and strength, like they always say. There's strength in numbers.
Yeah.
I said it backwards. Strength in numbers. Yeah. But,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
Well, I'm thinking to myself, you know, if the communities, now I don't want to, you know, put everything on the communities. I just want people to become more educated. And since we all live in communities, and some of them are urban, with me, I'm with the Bears. They don't do too much to me yet, but I don't have to worry too much around here. But, you know, but all the other places that I did live, I would go up and down the street, have my NASCA cards, all this other stuff, blah, 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 you bet. And there were some people that just were not interested, and they had kids, mind you. And I thought,
mm-hmm.
boy, you know, someday you might be very, very sorry that you don't listen. And then I just go my merry way. And it's really against the law to put information in people's mailboxes without their permission. This is what I was told. So I didn't do that. But so then I started going around the stores, and I would put, you know, information from NASCA or any organization that's going to give you the red flags of child abuse. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
many times people look at the bulletin boards, don't they, in the stores. You have to ask permission first, though, before you put something up. I even got it into the post offices right next to the thugs. It was funny.
Oh.
You know,
that's great.
I was wondering how long that was going to stay there, and you know, the most wanted by the FBI and all this other stuff. But it stayed there quite a while, and then it was taken down, and then they put it some other place, and I think it was in a separate room, but it was still there. So you see, the point is, any way we can find to educate the public,
mm-hmm.
and
yeah.
I think Bill once mentioned when you go to your neighborhood watch groups or your crime watch groups, wherever they are, Moore City, it's a different name like Crime Watch, or some of the others. And if you go to these groups once a month, you know, people will talk about, oh, I got something stolen off of my property, and not that that's good, don't get me wrong. Oh, I got a window smashed. But no one talks about child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, once I find out which department is, and I've been here, mind you, almost 4 years. It's changing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And but when I find out which police department is going to cover our area, then I would go to, or maybe I'd even start one, a crime watch or something.
Mm-hmm.
And at least once a month, you know, talk about what we can do as a community to keep our children safer. It wasn't that long ago that a little girl disappeared from this area.
Mm-hmm.
And you would think that would make people think. You know, instead they're saying, and there's nothing wrong with prayer. I believe in prayer. You know, I'm Catholic and I believe in prayer. But the point is all this, you know, it also takes action and education and caring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. All of that has to add up.
Yeah.
All of it has to add up. So, yeah, you know, and it's those small strides. And I think that, you know, people often think, well, I'm just one person, I'm just one voice, or, you know, what difference can I really make? But I would argue that, you know, when you have, you know, if you're just actively engaged in the conversations within your family, within your, you know, with your own children, with, you know, and then propelling things forward, you know, as you're kind of talking about getting into, like, well, what are the systems that, you know, need to be in awareness, you know, the police and community watch organizations and different people coming together, you know, one voice can do an awful lot in this world. And so, you know, the more educated you are, the more confident you are, the more resourced you are, then the easier that's going to be to then tackle the things that are challenging when it comes to this kind of, you know, conversation or effort. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
So true.
Let me go to Lori. Is she still there? Every once in a while I close my eyes and something happens. I do. She's there. Yes, she is. Lori, is there something you'd like to ask or make a comment about?
Oh, yeah, well, we do, and because I live by a school within walking distance that these kids go,
mm-hmm.
I always watch out. And I started, it is a neighborhood watch what we do. There's a bunch of people, you know. I've been here for like 37 years, so we know each other. And we look out. I mean, when the kids break for school, come home, you see the people coming out, looking out the window. That kind of thing also goes far.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of
mm-hmm.
people, you know, if it's like a meeting, some people don't want to get involved or can't get involved. They're so busy now and, you know, have to be at home anyway with the kids. So
mm-hmm.
for me out where I live, being so crowded over here, it helps. It definitely does help.
Uh-huh.
You know, because, you know, it's a scary thing. I remember being followed home. I missed my
wow.
bus from school. And the guy was just kept driving around and around.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just so close to me that I was sure on the fourth try that he was going to come and just snatch me. So I started
mm-hmm.
running up into the houses. I didn't know people, but I ran. I just went
mm-hmm.
on instinct. So those kind of things, like in this neighborhood where I am, the kids pick up on. So...
Mm-hmm.
You know, any way that you can get it out there, you know, you just feel, you know, whatever comes to your head to help to do something like that. You know, if you have to go up to a few doors and get the doors slammed, I don't want to get involved, then that's fine, as long as you have others that do want to get involved. So that's out here what we do.
Yeah, again.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I love the community and working together.
She makes me laugh because I chased this lady down the street. I was so mad. I wanted her to have information. I wasn't even in New Jersey. I was in Pennsylvania. And she was that real snotty and everything. So I said, I'll fix her. I'll chase her down the street. I don't advocate that people do that, okay? But she turned around finally and said, oh, all right, I'll take them. Oh, my God.
It is what it takes. I mean, you have to sometimes do that. You have more people running away from you.
I don't know what the people thought, but that's so
they think
funny.
They're like, what do you want, lady?
I bet you she went home and read them, Lori. I'll bet you she did.
Oh, I'm sure she did. You made an impression on her.
Let me see what this lunatic has to say to me. I don't care, you know. Oh, my God.
That's how I'm known here. Yeah. I'm known as the bully of the neighborhood because I don't let things slide here. I won't. I see like kids. I am.
Lori's a lot. We're both from New York, that's why.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I was just about to say it. It's on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the things that we're all...
here. I'm looking at her bio. Okay, abuses a child. Rachel provides a compassionate and challenging approach for her clients, using coaching to help survivors of childhood sexual abuse let go of the pain of abuse and finally feel normal. How does one let go of that pain? I get these weird calls at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. And people are so filled with pain, and it's really upsetting at times to listen to this. Believe me, I am only a person, and I do have feelings. Mm-hmm. But you know, yeah. So how do you approach that when someone comes in and they're so stuck in the rut of feeling the pain? Either one of I don't care who answers. You know, feeling the pain. Of you know, what they're going through, what they had gone through, and they can't move forward.
Yeah.
What do you do with that?
I mean, it's a layered process. I think what really has to happen first and foremost is reconnecting with hope. At the bottom of the line, when you experience trauma, most everybody goes into a state of denial. This wasn't that big of a deal. I'm fine. Everything's cool. Let me just go on with my life. Most people who experience abuse try to kind of tuck it away somehow, some way. And then most people end up having a moment. It's either a life change or something happens in their lives, or there's just like a level of like stress or disappointment that eventually comes along to make, you know, to make the moment of acknowledgement happen. Hey, this happened. This is a problem. This is affecting my life. It's still affecting my life. I need to do something about that. And in that journey of, okay, now I'm going to try to do something about that, you start testing things out. Let me try this book. Let me try this therapist. Let me, you know, run up this mountain. Let me meditate for 20 days on a pillow, right? You start kind of throwing, it's like throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping something sticks, right?
Right.
And in that process, it can become very frustrating because there can sometimes be the false message of, well, that didn't work for me, so therefore I really am too broken. And hope just starts to drain away and drain away and drain away. And so when people come to me, most of the time they're in a little bit of that place. They've tried lots of different things, but they're very book smart about trauma. They've read the books. They know the lingo. But they're just really missing the, like, what do I actually do about this? how do I actually shift out of the behaviors and the mindsets and the patterns that are, yes, instigated by trauma and abuse, but now in many, many ways don't even necessarily have much to do with that anymore. It's just patterning, repetition, mm-hmm. habits. And so we start by building back the foundation of hope. Like, let's believe you can change. Let's really look at this with a different perspective, because that's what's going to propel you towards taking action. And then from there, you know, I think that the process really has to do with first healing the nervous system, getting the body and the brain working in harmony again. You cannot release trauma. You cannot heal trauma when you're in a constant state of dysregulation. You're triggered here. You're triggered there. You're having flashbacks over there. You have sleeplessness over here. Like, we've got to get your brain and your body back into harmony. We've got to start to repair that injury. And then from that place, we've got to go in and scoop out all of the shame. We got to get rid of that. That shame that it was your fault, that you're somehow broken or damaged. And in the process of working with shame, what's really happening is we're shifting blame. We're getting things in the proper order. Mm-hmm. That was not my choice. That was not my fault. There wasn't anything about me that caused this. There wasn't anything about my needs, my desires, my reactions, my responses. And as we start to shift that, like, we can't actually let go of something that we're, like, falsely taking the blame for. So we have to do that work. We have to feel the feelings. A lot of people experience trauma, and then they quick snap, lock it all away, right? All the anger, all the hurt, all the resentment, all the sadness. And they've got it tight, you know, in this tight little box, and never actually feel the anger about it, the sadness about it. And so we have to feel it. We have to feel that, but we have to know how to do that in a healthy way. I have a client right now where, you know, we text quite a bit, and I say, okay, now's the moment. You're feeling something. Now we're going to think about, are we going to deal with that destructively, or are we going to deal with that constructively? So understanding that process, starting to wrap your head around what life looks like to be in healthy relationship, knowing how to trust and be vulnerable, and then how to really release. So that's a very long answer to your short question, how do we let it go? But, you know, I think that's true. Everybody wants to move on with their lives. That's why I do this work. Trauma is not meant to be a life sentence. We aren't meant to spend our lives, you know, hurting and in pain. And mm-hmm. I think that's part of the reason why I've been so motivated to add in this new branch to my work, because I would, you know, love to decrease the number of people who are in need of me. And so with more awareness, with more prevention, and with better response, right, mm-hmm. then, you know, we can heal people up so much more, sooner and better, so that their lives, you know, there aren't years and years of patterning that we're working to unravel and undo.
Right, right. That may have been a long answer, but it was a good one.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it Thank was, you. Absolutely. You know, you remind me, mm-hmm. I saw this young man, I've known him for quite some years, and he came from a horrific background. Mm-hmm. And he would always walk around slumped over, he wouldn't make eye contact, and it was really sad to watch him. And finally one day I had a little talk with him. I said, why don't you go see a therapist or something? See, he and I were too close. I couldn't talk to him. Sometimes, you know, he was almost like family, you know what I'm saying?
And, sure.
Then that gets in the way. But anyway, he did go and get help, and he saw the same therapist. He was lucky. He chose a good one the first time around. And within 2 years, this young man walked tall. He made eye contact. Yes. And he had confidence, and it was just night and day, night and day.
Love that.
Yeah.
And that, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I just felt so proud of him and so thankful.
Yeah.
You know, I never asked him what her name was. He doesn't have to tell me that. But, you know, the point is he had found himself a very good therapist. And you see, when people do talk therapy, I very much believe in talk therapy, a lot of times it's just, you know, it can work wonders. It absolutely can.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you can get to the root, you know, to the root of where it all starts, where those feelings come from. To this day, someone needs to smack me in the head or something. I can't cry. Okay? It'll get all the way up into, like, the middle of my throat. Instead of letting my feelings out, I will internalize.
Mm-hmm.
And that can make you sick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It can.
Mm-hmm.
It can make you sick. And I've done a lot of studies on that, too. You know, because then it starts talking about the heart. People have problems with their heart. They'll have problems with their stomach. They'll have problems with this or that, whatever. And and so many people, you know, are just so racked with grief. And they need to get beyond that grief, or they need to learn to cry to release that grief, you know. Like when I was a kid in school, I, you know, very much so was involved with sports. And that was very good, okay? And I would go outside. We always owned a lot of property. And I would go outside at home, and I would run and run and run and run and run and run, and run until I dropped, because a lot of my problems were coming from home, okay, because of a brother. I mean, I could go on and on and on about the people, all right? So I needed to release, since I couldn't cry, I needed to release that that built-up, I don't know, adrenaline, energy, and it wasn't positive adrenaline or energy. Instead, it was eating away at me. So, and then what happens? Then that's when the people, many times, they turn to drug and they turn to alcohol. And I certainly turned to alcohol and popped a lot of pills. I don't know why I'm alive, because they were all downers. You know, back in the day, it was Quaaludes. That's how far back I go. But, you know, I would drink beer with it. I was just a kid, and my friends would supply me with it because they were older. They were shooting up, and I was popping pills and drinking. And we were all from dysfunctional homes, and homes where we were being beaten and, you know, sexually abused and all this other stuff. NASCA makes up a big part of that. A lot of us have somewhat of the same story, you know.
Sure.
Some, we don't take a yardstick and measure. We don't do that. But, you know, trauma is what it is. And that's something that you had spoken about, both of you, before, about trauma. And when a person experiences trauma, it so negatively affects them and can. And whether, you know, we have the five things that we speak about on our mission statement, whether, you know, whether it be sexual abuse, physical, mental, emotional, or neglect, all of which I went through and a lot of us have, all five of them. And, you know, those five abuses, they can knock the hell out of you. Oh, yes, they can. And if you don't know how to handle that, if you don't know how to step forward and feel proud of yourself, how do you feel proud of yourself when you're constantly told that you're no good or you're stupid or, I don't know, maybe people are told they're funny looking, I don't know, whatever it is, to make you feel bad about yourself. And then you have to find a way to climb up out of that hole, because that's what you're in. You're like in a ditch, and you have to climb up. But let me tell you something. If you have a good therapist or a good counselor, if you have that, they can help you with that. And people can become happy. They can all of a sudden see the light at the end of the tunnel, you know, and feel better about themselves. I've seen it. I saw it, that young man I was just talking about. And I've seen it even within myself. So, you know, I thank God for counselors and therapists and other people that help, and people, you know, who want to do community service and help society, because society right now is not very good. You know.
Few dark clouds, to say the least. Thank you, as always, for telling the story. You know, I think it's so impactful when we can hear from people who have
clearly been through trauma and had difficult experiences and are finding ways to live powerfully and live free and, you know, redefine, you know, and really reclaim. I think that's such an important, you know, piece of the puzzle is, you know, our lives are our lives and they don't belong to the people who caused us harm. And, no. You know, we get to move forward and we get to thrive and really live through an empowered place. And so, you know, I know when we're thinking about this intersection between somebody who has experienced trauma and then is now parenting. I think, Toby, you can speak to this more than I can maybe, but I think this is part of why Toby was excited to work with me. Because, right, like, this is something we get to blend in this training. It really comes
100%.
Yeah, go ahead, Toby. You can say a little more.
Oh, no. I was just saying 100%. I love exactly where you're going because we want to be able to – we want to step into protecting our children differently than how we were protected, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't always know how to do things differently unless we have partners like Rachel and her Beyond Surviving community or the Empowered Parent program that we do. That's how we learn to do beyond how was done to us.
Yeah, right. I love that. Yeah.
Right. That's exactly right. And that's so good. Mm-hmm. The more I learn,
Carol,
learn.
Is it okay if I just mention the website real quick before
I
forget, just in case anybody listening? Thank you.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah,
if you're listening and you're curious about the Empowered Parent, this training is coming up on November 12th. That's a Saturday. It'll be a 4-hour training starting at 11 a.m. and going until 2 p.m. Eastern. And so you can go to bit.ly/theempoweredparent. You can also email me coach@rachelgrantcoaching.com. We have 8 spots left. Another of our intentions is that we want the training to be intimate, right? Because again, our goal is to be able to work with the people individually to support them in creating systems that will work for their families specifically. So we only have 10 spots and only 8 remaining. And so, yeah, I really hope you all will come along and check this out. If you happen to miss it this time around, we'll be offering it again next year. But the holidays are coming up, and
right,
this is a time when we're going to be often around lots of people and lots of people we love and trust, but also lots of circumstances and context in which trauma can happen, and even just the space in which you might be going back into environments where somebody who caused harm is, and you know that, and how do I navigate that? So we'll be bringing that into the conversation this time around as well. Toby, anything you want to add there? Anything I missed?
Oh, gosh. No, I really think you covered it. And I do hope that folks are inclined to learn more about this because people will just walk away being able to protect their children in just completely new and different ways immediately after the training. And, you know, Rachel, it's just always a pleasure working with you, the work you do with your Beyond Surviving community, and then taking that additional step to prevention. It's amazing sharing this space with you.
Awesome. Thanks, babe. Carol, thank you so much, and Bill and everyone at NASCA for giving us this opportunity to come and share, you know, our stories and share about this work that we're so excited to be doing. Thank you for being supportive of that effort in the name of community, eh?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're quite welcome. And, well, I think we have a few minutes left because I haven't heard that silly lady talk in my ear yet.
I know. You know how she cuts me off every time? I'm like, she's not cutting me off this time.
I can't tell time, right? And you can't tell time. I know. It's very, very annoying. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's no, we get an extra 30 seconds. No, baby, you're done.
Oh, I can't wait to hear this lady. I'm so excited to hear her.
Right? Well, you know what? What we do at the very end of the program, and either one of you can do this, or Rachel, you can do it if you want. I don't know. But just leave the people with hope, okay? Maybe just give a sentence, and by that time, that silly lady will come on. Go ahead.
Awesome. I'll go, Toby, then you can go. I just want everybody listening to know that you are never too broken to heal. What did happen to you does not define you. And I really just invite you to come into conversation about what it is you really want to create in your life, the life that you want to live, and go after it. And don't give up until you find the resources, the support, or the mentor that helps you get there. Toby?
Mm-hmm. I am not going to add one single thing to that. I just want to say amen. That was so beautiful.
Amen. There you go.
Yes. Yes. That was so, yes. so beautifully said.
I agree with that.
Filled my heart.
Well, you both did a wonderful job. You absolutely did. And you had a lot of good information. And I hope that you have, you know, what you're looking for with this event. I hope everything comes well through. And true, the holidays are coming up. I don't know. And, you know, I'm not out in California. I'm in New Jersey. But, you know, are you doing Zoom or is it in person?
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's a virtual meeting. So, yes, you can join from anywhere, wherever you are, the comfort of your living room or home. And so, yes, and you'll also have access to the recording for a week following the training, so you'll be able to listen back and absorb. We'll be giving you a workbook, and you'll also get a little one-on-one session with Toby to even dive deeper into kind of developing your personalized plan for your family. So there's lots that you can get access to by participating this time around, for sure.
And we've really combined the best of both worlds. It's going to be via Zoom, but it's going to be done live. So it's not like it's a recorded webinar. There will be a lot of interaction and a lot of good discussion. I'm in Indiana. Rachel's in California. And when we did this last time in April, we had parents really from all over the country. It was really beautiful.
That's wonderful. And I think people feel, you know, comfortable, too, because it's not being recorded. They can relax, you know what I'm saying? And they feel like, you know, they're not being zeroed in on. And they can just simply, you know, come out with, you know, be a part of and not feel funny about it. Am I going to say something wrong? And that'll be recorded, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know that this show, of course, is recorded. And, again, this is, what scan number was this? I think it was 3040. Yeah, scan number 3040. Anyone out there who wants to hear this show, all you have to do is, you know, look for 3040-3040 and Rachel Grant's name. It's under her. And today's date. And then go to 3040, and you will find that in the archives it's there. And it will be there forever. Yes,
forever and ever.
Forever
so speaking of,
ever.
If you happen to be listening to this recording way, way down the road, still come to the website. If you'll be able to sign up for the wait list. If we're not offering a live training, we can circle back and let you know when the next live training is. And you're also welcome to pop over to rachelgrantcoaching.com and check out the free resources there as always, too. And Carol, you're just so fabulous. I always just love connecting with you, and I thank you for your bravery, for your compassion, for your unwillingness to give in, and your unstoppableness. You're a badass.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you so much for that. And you know, I just think you're wonderful too. Anyone that cares about children, okay, you and Toby, and all the other people we have on, we have wonderful guests that come on. You know, I just am so thankful for them. I truly am.
Yeah.
Because we are the ones that are going to make the difference. Remember
yeah,
that.
Cheers to that.
That's exactly right.
Yes. Yeah. So, everyone, I want to thank you for listening tonight. I got my 90-second cue. And she interrupted me. How dare she? But anyway, okay. So, you know, we'll be back on Monday, and we'll have another show. And We have our guests that come on Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays, and Tuesdays and Thursdays. Those nights are meant, you know, for professionals to come on and speak. And sometimes we have them on Friday. Tonight we had two of them. That was wonderful. So, and we also have Zoom. So remember Zoom meetings are like Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sunday. I think they're in the afternoon. I have not yet gone to one, but I think they're in the afternoon. And so, good night. God bless. Stay safe. And if you see someone chasing you, run like hell. That's what I always tell people. Run. Run. Because I don't know what else to say. Okay. Take care. And, you know, you guys, you can come on any night you want to, you know, if you want to be on the panel. That'd be great. Okay? If you have any free time.
Thank
you. Okay.
Awesome.
Good night,
ma'am. Thank you so
very
much.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Another tomorrow. Cause that dawn was gone. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Blog Talk Radio.